Caller number 10 right now. 800-636-1067. You'll win two tickets to Post Malone with Jelly Roll, the Big Ass Stadium Tour. Monday, June 2nd at Northwest Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, visit thefandc.com/events. Caller 10, 800-636-1067. Good luck to you winning those tickets. 4 o'clock, D.C. area, 106.7 The Fan, The Grant and Danny Show, Toby in for GP. When it's 4 o'clock in the D.C. area on 106.7 The Fan, we do a little something. It's called the Beltway Blitz. We'll talk about all the teams, get you a little cliff notes, let you know what you need to know about all of the locals' big picture sports stuff. We're going to start right here on the Diamond. Our pal Bobby Blanco from the Bronx for Masson Sports covers those Nationals. Bobby, I had to fall asleep. I thought they blew it, but they didn't. Come back 7 runs and extras. That was a wild one.
Yeah, I wish I could have fallen asleep, although my 5-month-old took care of that the following morning after a couple of late-night games this week. But, yeah, I mean, if you fell asleep, you probably saw Mackenzie Gore shove for 6 innings, 8 strikeouts, became the first pitcher to record 100 strikeouts this season, recorded his 500th in his career, which is always impressive milestones for the young lefty. But then Jorge Lopez gave those 2 runs right back and didn't allow Mackenzie to get his win. But, yeah, like you mentioned, top of the 10th inning, they go to extra innings. All the guys come up, and they basically just hit around and capped off with a big 3-run bomb by Josh Bell to get up to a 7-run lead, finish the game at 9-3. They win a series against a really good Mariners team out west, 2 games out of 3. So that's a good start to this road trip. Now they head to Arizona to face, you know, an Arizona team that's talented, but scuffling a little bit. I think they've lost 7 out of their last 10. But we know they have some talent, even though the Nationals took 2 or 3 from them in D.C. Last month.
Mackenzie Gore seems like he's taken another step this season. What's been most impressive for you about his start to the year?
Oh, Toby, we were talking about this on Monday. I mean, he's just been electric. I mean, I just think that the consistency is finally there. I know it's only 2 months into the season. We just got past Memorial Day. So, you know, he still has a little bit more left to prove. But it just seems like a lot of those outings where, especially, I look back at that Orioles outing, and you and I dove into that one pretty deeply. You know, the 2 runs, I know he only went 3 2/3 with 10 hits and 9 strikeouts, but like the 10 hits part, I mean, he gave up so many base runners, but he only allowed 2 to score. I mean, that just shows so much more growth from him right there, where I feel like, yeah, that's even last year or even a couple of times in the past couple of seasons where he's been, even when he's doing really well, that's an outing that spirals out of control for him. And he was able to hone down. I know we didn't get deep into the game, but he kept that game close for the Nats. And they ended up winning that one. So I just think it's been more consistency. He hasn't gotten let an outing spiral out of control when some things go against his way. He's been really impressive so far this season.
Bobby, are we approaching a time where they're going to see what Nathaniel Lowe and K'Bur Ruiz can do instead of James Wood?
Meaning?
He ain't seen any more strikes?
Yeah, and just we're giving the Barry Bonds treatment to James Wood.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not saying he's Barry Bonds. They made one of that guy. But in this lineup, there's not much protection back there. And I'm not letting him beat me if I have a team that's trying to win.
No, I get it, too. I mean, and like, you know, the home runs he hit just in Seattle, the 2-run double, they bring in a lefty to face him, and he takes the first pitch the other way to give the Nats the lead, I think, the other night. Yeah, I mean, Nathaniel Lowe and Josh Bell, to an extent, were brought in to provide that protection for James and CJ on top of the order. We know Josh Bell has been struggling recently. He hit 2 home runs back-to-back games for the first time, so that's possibly a sign that his swing's coming around. But Nathaniel Lowe started off hot, has definitely cooled off lately, not providing a lot of protection for James right there. You would like to see one of those 3 guys kind of pick it back up. Luis Garcia Jr., we know, has been one of the most unlucky players in all of baseball to start this season. He had 4 hits last night. That's possibly a good sign of things to come. So, yeah, they definitely need some of these guys to step up. So, because teams, I bet you, will start doing that. They're going to be like, look, the number one, number two guy are not going to beat us. Make someone else in this lineup beat us. And it's going to be hard for James and CJ to kind of carry this offense if teams are just going to pitch around them.
Bobby, I know you can't control this, but can we please see Brady House in the big soon?
10th home run yesterday, Tobes. I know you were watching. Yeah. I mean, he's been hitting the ball really well at AAA. I think he's got 5 home runs now in May, all in his last, the second half of the month. So he's starting to heat up. I mean, all the guys that have come from AAA, Dalen, Robert Hassel, Trey Lipscomb, they've all said that, like, man, it sucks playing up there early in the season. It's so cold. It's raining. Mm-hmm. It's snowing. It's so hard to hit. So this is bound to come, right? We've just been waiting kind of a little bit for that weather to warm up, and we'll see the ball fly off Brady's bat, and that's been coming true. He's already got 10 homers on the season, like I said. You know, the Nationals aren't getting a lot of production from their third baseman right now. Jose Tena and Amed Rosario have been splitting time right there, and they're not really providing a whole lot offensively for this national team. And that kind of ties back into Danny's previous questions, like who provides protection for James Wood? If Brady Hough comes up and is able to provide some extra pop to this lineup, I think the Nationals might have to consider that sooner rather than later. But I think that we're still looking at probably a July timeline for Brady, like they did with James last year. I think Mike Rizzo likes to be patient. He likes to bring them up when they're for sure ready, and then also ready to stay long term. He's not going to bring them up back and forth willy-nilly.
Bobby, thank you as always, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a great show.
You got it, my friend. Hit that NBA sounder, Darius. You got Tobin, you got me discussing the association. Indiana gave away an opportunity last night, whether you win the game, lose the game, etc. Not a championship effort from a team that hasn't been there before.
No, they have to come out much better in Game 6, where you're going to be at home, you're going to have all the momentum still, because you can win this thing, but the Knicks feel like they have a life now. You know, and they've been in this series, it's been close throughout, but Indiana has to come out with a much better effort. They need to be able to push the pace. They need to play better defensively. The adjustments that Tibbs finally made offensively for the Knicks paid off. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of adjustments Rick Carlisle makes to return that. But I think Indiana's got to come out with a much better effort if they still want to advance past this series.
What awaits them, whoever them happens to be, is Oklahoma City. How beatable are they for either of these two teams? Like, write me the script. What's the formula? Is there one?
Right. SGA gets hurt. Jalen Williams get hurt. I don't see one, frankly. They play too good defensively. The main thing that you could maybe have happen is if the Thunder, which I haven't really seen them do this much this playoffs, is if they have an effort like Indiana did last night where they lose focus. Chances of that happening four times, unlikely. Maybe you can steal a game or two, but Oklahoma City's just too good, Danny. Like, there's a reason why they're such heavy favorites against either of these teams. I don't see any of them given. And also, I know people are like, I don't know that people are shocked by this, but they shouldn't be. They were the best team in the regular season, and it wasn't even close, Danny. Like, they were not close when you look at the standings. There's a reason that this was a 68-win team. They were 68-14. Of course they're going to be heavily favored against a 51-win Knicks and a 50-win Indiana Pacers. They're that much better. They dominated all season. They had a plus 12.9 point differential in the regular season. They're just a better team. I think Oklahoma City is going to win their first NBA Finals, and frankly, it's probably good for the NBA that they are.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about that. The ratings for these finals aren't going to be great. And for people that like to, I don't have a better word than this, but dunk on the NBA or talk trash about it, they're going to have a field day. They'll do their tap dance.
Sure.
Whether it's NHL fans only or somebody else will say, really, this is what you're talking about. So they'll have a field day with that. But I'm arguing that long term for the association, this is good. This is like eating your vegetables. And then you go, hey, I can fit into these pants again. I think they needed to get away. And we realize now that I think that's happened. What is it? It's going to be 7 straight years with a different champion?
7 straight, yep.
So I think we now realize we needed this. So it ends it's not going to end the 24/7, 365. This guy just signed a 4-year deal. Where is he going in 6 months?
Correct.
Type stuff. And who wore what to the arena. It's not going to close all of that out. But it can recenter the focus on basketball again instead of the dramatics that seem to move the needle for the talking heads.
I think they need to change what the narratives are, though. And that's why I think the ratings might be down, like you said. Frankly, I don't care about that stuff. Like, to me, it's not going to affect me, right? Like, look what happened with baseball a couple years ago where you had the Rangers and the D-backs and everyone complained about it. Next year, you have Yankees and Dodgers. Not a big deal.
It'll work itself out.
Right? But with basketball, I think what needs to happen is we need to readjust the way that we talk about the game. Maybe not us specifically, but the way that the game is talked about, because all we talk about is what you said. Guy signs a big deal, and you're like, 6 months later, hey, where's he going? Can we get him out of here? Everyone's talking about Giannis once again in Milwaukee and trying to get him out, and they're trying to send him to the Lakers. They're trying to send him to New York. They're trying to send him all these different places. In all likelihood, if Indiana can take care of business, the two teams left are Oklahoma City and Indiana, places that people don't want to go play. Like, that's not the prime destination. So we need to change this idea of, hey, get them out, send them to the big market. Change it back to when you focus only on the stars, there's a little bit of an issue. There's stars in these smaller markets. Shea is one. Tyrese is one. So I think they have to just readjust a little bit, but I think this will be good for the league.
Let's talk about the Local 53, Darius. That's Johnny Cakes, Allville's music to join the Beltway Blitz to talk about the Washington Foosball, gentlemen. Flakesy, question for you. Is Jaden Daniels sophomore slump proof?
My easy answer is yes. He's a superstar. I have to tell Eric Bickle all the time of late, don't be a schedule scaredy cat. Don't be afraid of all these teams on the horizon with their big, scary quarterbacks. You know why? Because we finally have one of the big scary monster quarterbacks in Jaden Daniels, who should be even better in year two with the additions of Laramie Tunsil and Connerly to upgrade the offensive line. Not to mention Deebo Samuel, who's playing for a big, gigantic sack of money that would be bigger than any of us at the Fan put together if we worked 150 years. We couldn't get a bag of money that big. So, yeah, I think if he just keeps as dedicated as he's been, and look, he's a big football nerd. We know he's always trying to get better. And I think he's working with a guy in Kingsbury who's striving to make him better. And look, Kingsbury, he wants to get a head coaching gig too, and he's well on his way to doing that. So another big year out of Jaden, which I expect is going to help everybody accomplish their goals.
If you were Johnny Cakes Kingsbury, Danny and I were having this discussion the other day where
yes.
If Terry's going to be your number one priority, getting him the ball, Debo's probably number two. Who's your third guy in that pecking order to say, we got to make sure this guy's involved in the offense?
I think if he can stay healthy, I think Austin Eckler is kind of like, he's like a cheat Cody type of guy. Like, he's not going to be the Austin Eckler of 7 or 8 years ago catching 100 balls. But if he can avoid the concussions and stay healthy, I mean, he could catch 60 or 65 balls and be one of those game breaker types on offense. Like, look, you mentioned it. You expect it from Terry. You know you're going to get it from Deebo as long as he bounces back, because last year was not good for Deebo. We all know that. I think if Eckler can stay upright and they use him in the right role, I mean, we know he's not like the goal line hammer. He's an explosive guy that you get the ball to in space. He could be that third option for Jaden Daniels.
Flexi, Ben Sinnott had like two more catches than you and I did last year, and he was a second round pick. And partly it's because Ertz was frankly healthy for the first time in near a millennia, numbers approximate. I don't necessarily expect that this coming year, talking about Ertz's health, but how much of a factor is Ben Sinnott going to be? Kind of an afterthought now, huh?
He has to be a much bigger factor, Danny. And that's like we've talked about on the Junks, you know, a lot, that if Ben Sinnott doesn't take that step in year two, that's going to be one where you, like, everybody trusts Adam Peters. Everybody, you know, let Adam cook the whole nine. And I am too. But you don't draft a tight end in the second round to catch 10 balls and be a really good blocker. I know that Danny Hughey loves him some fantasy football. And
correct.
If you draft a tight end who gets you 5 catches in a season, that's no bueno. It's not good for your fantasy squad, and it's not good in real-life football as well. I was postulating that Ben Sinnott, he has to 5X his production in year two, and I think that's even light. He has to have at least 25 catches to validate picking that guy in the second round, in my opinion.
How do you feel about the defense overall? Feels like the offense is better for sure. I think we all feel that way going into this year. What about the defense? Do you feel that same way?
I think if Lattimore can be the Lattimore 80 or 90% of what we saw of him in his prime with the Saints, I think the defense is in good shape. He's a guy that's going to play in 7, 10, or 11 games and miss a big chunk of the season, then I think the defense could be in trouble. That could be where you really need Amos to step forward as a rookie if Lattimore isn't a guy who can play in 15-plus games. I think he is one of the keys to the defense. I mean, you traded a lot of draft capital to get him here to be a shutdown, lockdown type of corner. And guys, like, I mean, you know this. Look at the murderer's row of wideouts that this team faces just in their division. Neighbors, Pickens, CeeDee Lamb, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. I mean, the list goes on and on. Like, there aren't any easy outs there for your top corners. So Lattimore's got to be the key. He has to bounce back.
Are you confident he will, Kixie, talking about Lattimore?
Confidence. I'm about, is 70, 75% confident? I don't know. I'd say mildly confident. He has to look better than he did in most of the stretches after he came here last year. I have to chalk a lot of that up to the hamstring injury that just dogged him. He never was right. I hope that, look, him not coming to the OTAs, I'm sorry, I know it's voluntary, it's a bad look. That's the guy who should be at OTAs. Tunsil, you get a pass because you never played here before. Terry McLaurin, you're the most stand-up guy that's probably ever played for the franchise since Art Monk. You get a pass too because we know you're going to get your deal done and then you'll be back giving 150%. He's an amazing guy, both on the field, in the locker room, everything you need. Lattimore, sorry, even though it's voluntary, he should be here.
How do you feel about the run game with Brian Robinson? Do you feel like it's going to be better because of the improved offensive line, or where do you stand on B-Rob?
I like B-Rob. Don't love B-Rob. That's kind of where I am with him. Like, I just feel like you can get a Brian Robinson-level talent almost every year in the draft. Like, I would expect this to be his last year in Washington. I don't think this franchise has any designs on extending him. I'm pretty down the middle of the road with Brian Robinson. I think he's a very replaceable level running back.
Let me set the stage for you, Flakesy. A couple of friends, let's say three friends are getting together. There's a local court. They're playing some pickle. It's a rec game. Decent rec game, not a great rec game, right? It's a good quality rec game, good reps, good times, good laughs, good folks, good friends. What paddles Johnny Cake Salvo using right now?
Danny, this is a softball right down the middle for your boy. Your boy is now currently using the brand new Yola Ben Johns. Hold on.
The purse is the 14 or 16?
I think it's a 16. I just got it, and I've been using it for the last 2 weeks, and I love it. Can't get enough of it. Danny, you know I'm a Yola guy. You know this. We all know this.
Yeah, first of all, we both know that we're both Yola guys. I've been using the Agassi 16 millimeter. I have never played with a paddle this heavy, Cakes, but it doesn't play heavy. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know, but maybe I'm a 16-millimeter guy. I thought I was a 14. I thought I needed the pop. Maybe I don't.
When are Cakes and Danny going to just smack the ball around? Is this ever going to happen? I just feel like it's never going to happen.
Well, the major issue is, one, you're the king of only, which is far from where old Rainy Duyer lives. Two, it's this damn schedule.
This is true.
It's your mornings. Yeah. You're morning Marty, and when you're working, I'm dropping kids off at school, shucking and jiving. It's me and the blue hairs hitting drop shots and lobbing each other, right? When you're getting off work.
We are pickleball ships passing in the night, my friend. At some point, maybe we'll pull into the same port together.
So I'm dead serious about this, and we probably shouldn't work this out on air. We should conduct business off it. I want to do a you and me station tournament where people come. And maybe we you and me play together, or we raffle off the ability to play with you, and then I'm there also. Whatever it is, something we should do together.
Let's do it. I'll have my people get in touch with your people. We'll set up a meeting. We'll make this happen.
This is what I like. That's Johnny Cake Sawville. That's why he's the best. Thank you, buddy.
Boys, have a great weekend.
See you, my friend. Appreciate that, Cakes. That is Flakes. It really is a nice paddle, the Agassi. He got the Ben Johns. I played with the Gen 1 Ben Johns Perseus, which to me was ahead of its time. Now a lot of different companies have caught up. Really, really interesting, the developments there in the pickleball paddles. If you have any questions,
sure,
feel free to come to me.
I have no idea what any of these numbers mean.
Yeah.
I don't know the point of these.
It's the thickness of the paddle, Tope.
So normally
you would think a thicker paddle means what? More jump, more explosion? It's the opposite. A little bit more cushion.
So you're trying to decide if you want to be more attacking, you want to be deadening it, a little defensive.
Yeah. So you go through phases as a pickleball player. You do. You go through phases. So my first phase is I'm playing baseline. I'm playing a lot of singles. I need to start gripping and ripping, right? So my Yola Perseus 1, Generation 1, 14-millimeter, that's what I'm playing with. And now all of a sudden I start to play doubles, and I'm getting in hands battles. And I'm back and forth. I'm popping things out of bounds. Some of my drives are going awry. And I go, I need a little bit more control. So enter the Ruby 6.0. I'm now using more of a control paddle. Well, now my game is kind of evolving. So pick up the Engage Pro Pursuit 6. That's nice little kind of all-core paddle for me. I get this Agassi paddle, the 16-millimeter, and now I don't know who I am anymore. I know I like the paddle a lot. I know that.
The only thing that I could relate to of everything you just said was drives going awry, and that was more so on the golf course for myself.
I love it.
It's the only thing I can relate to.
It's the best when you can make it relatable. That's how I learn material. That's Toby. I'm Danny. I'm Grant and Danny here on The Fam. Plenty more to come here this afternoon. You heard me ask that question to Johnny Cakesalvo about Jaden Daniels being sophomore slump-proof. We'll do that at 5. But next, we are stealing a segment from Good Morning Football on NFL Network about who the threats to the Eagles are. We'll go through the NFC, talk AFC too, figure out where Washington ranks in that hierarchy. We'll do that next on The Fan. We haven't gotten to this, Tobes, but it's something I want to get to before we get out of here for the week. I saw a report. I saw it. But we've been doing other things, actually meaningful things, where the NCAA wants to expand, or someone from the NCAA to expand the tournament field.
Please, no.
And I got news. It's probably going to happen. Because the dirty little secret is that NCAA men's tourney is the only thing that the NCAA makes a lot of money on, and they make a lot of money. They run the other tournaments, whether it's college baseball, which is happening right now, college lacrosse, any other championship, mm-hmm. the NCAA runs it. College football is its own sort of different animal. But the NCAA runs the big tournaments, and the one that makes them a bucket of loot is that basketball one. And they want to expand operations. So you know what's going to happen? A bigger tournament.
Please, no.
More teams.
Stop.
I don't know if it's 128. I don't know if it's 256. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, they're talking just over 70 right now, but just leave it at 68, please.
By the way, 68's a terrible number.
It is. It's terrible. I liked it when it was just 64. I don't need the first right four. I don't get it. But regardless, we don't need more than 70.
We certainly do not. That's Toby. I'm Danny G&D here on The Fan. Tobes in for GP. What are you doing to protect your family's assets? This is the exclusive sponsor of our show. The law firm of Condori and Morod can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. So sometimes somebody does something somewhere in sports media or a TV show or another radio show where you go, you know what? We're going to have to do that. This is one of those times. And I want everyone to know, NFL Network, Good Morning Football, you guys did an awesome job on this segment. And we are ripping it off from you. We'll grab that audio as soon as we possibly can. But the subject is, who can dethrone the Eagles? Who are the biggest threats to the Eagles? I want to start in the NFC, Tobes. So I'm sure you've compiled the list, as have I. You could rank them if you want to. We can write them all down and then rank them, whatever. And then we'll expand it to the league at large. The best candidates to dethrone the Eagles. We'll start in the NFC. The teams that can give the Eagles the most trouble or beat them outright are?
Got to be Detroit.
Yep.
Up there. You're saying just NFC?
So far, we'll go NFC.
Probably the Commanders, number two.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I have not seen this list. So, I'm just kind of going off. Let's go with the Vikings? Is that up there?
14-3 team from last year.
Yeah. I mean,
they had a down year 2 years ago. They just extended their GM. They have been a damn juggernaut, pretty much.
Well, and by the way, they had a more mobile quarterback. Sam Darnold was incredible last year, but I can't have a guy that shrinks in big situations like that. So they could take a step this year because you get into those bigger moments, they're not going to win 15 games or something like that. But you get a guy that's a little more mobile, can move a little bit, and can probably process a little bit quicker than Sam Darnold. Maybe doesn't have the physical tools. I don't know. I think they could be fine. KOC is an incredible coach. I think that's probably the real ones for me. Maybe you could throw the Rams in there just from their experience, having a quarterback like Matt Stafford. They were really close to beating the Eagles last year in the playoffs.
If it's not for the snow, maybe they do.
Yeah. So I think they have to be in there as well, but probably those four. I don't think the Cowboys count. I don't think the Packers are there. I don't think the Buccaneers are there. I think that's kind of it for me.
So I'm going to throw out a couple nominees. Let's see, and you can reject if you don't like it. You already said Dallas. I like their offseason, by the way. I mean, I hate the Cowboys. I hope they lose every game, yada, yada, yada. Usual caveats apply. But I don't trust Brian Schottenheimer, to be honest with you. But I like the Cowboys offseason. And I think they are a threat in this division to maybe not win it, but to not be pushovers anymore.
Did you see that they're like opening team building activity? They went paintballing.
I did see that.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Paintballing's so much fun. But yeah, I like what they did in the offseason. I just think they're going to do the Cowboys thing, Danny. They're going to do the Cowboys thing where they'll be talked about, they'll be somewhat relevant, and then when it comes time to actually win a meaningful football game, they're not going to. I think that's what it's going to be. So wouldn't surprise me if they win 10 games, they were in the playoffs, and maybe even they win one playoff game, but chances are they're not going any further than divisional round.
Yeah, I got them in that 9-win area. I think they'll be better than last year. They were 7-10 last year. I mean, listen, they got outscored by more than 115 points, which tells you they're not very good. I think they'll be much improved and fine. I think they end up around fine this year. Green Bay. Is Green Bay a threat to you?
I don't know that I trust Jordan Love enough. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think I trust him enough, especially with their receivers. And I know they spent a first rounder on Matthew Golden. He doesn't seem like the first round caliber that we've seen in years past, right? Like if this were a Malik Nabers, it's a little bit different of a situation, or a Brian Thomas Jr. was selected in the kind of the range that Matthew Golden was. I don't think they're on the same tier. So to me, I still have a question about who's the number one option on that offense. And Jordan Love to me is too erratic. Like he can beat some teams. He has a little bit of that Brett Favre in him, right? Where he can go win a game. He can also go lose you the game. So I just don't believe in them enough to feel like they're going to take that next step to beat a Philadelphia.
So I don't believe in them either. But if, again, I always do my weird exercise. If you and I both fell into comas and woke up February next year, and I told you the Packers finished 8-9, or I told you the Packers finished 12-5, both are possible to me.
Correct.
Because here's what that 12-5 meant. Minnesota's not as good as advertised. J.J. McCarthy maybe isn't quite ready for prime time. They got Minnesota once. They maybe, you know, Chicago doesn't take the leap in year one with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams together. They're pretty good defensively again. Matt LaFleur can sure coach. They have I think it was the third best point differential in the NFC last year. They're always pretty good. They don't do, they're kind of the Steelers. Thank you.
Yeah, the NFC.
They're Steelers of the NFC. They could be pretty good. They could also be fine to me. I don't have a great feel for them at this stage. They finally spent on receiver, and I'm with you on Golden. I liked Golden a lot, but it's relative to the rest of the cast. It's not Marvin Harrison. It's not Neighbors, who you said. It's not Brian Thomas. He's good. I think he goes with Jaden Reed well. It's a nice complimentary thing. I just don't know if I trust them. Jordan Love is tantalizing at times, but where's my consistent excellence that we saw down the stretch a couple of years ago where everyone's coming into last year thinking that's an MVP candidate?
One thing that I really like Matt LaFleur. I think he's one of the best coaches in the league. One issue that I have from my time covering him up in Milwaukee to now is he's not someone that is incredibly forward-thinking. What I mean by that is a gripe that we always had is he had to see a situation before he could be successful in a situation. So he would lose a playoff game before he's able to make the adjustments necessary to win a playoff game. And at some point, you run into people that are a little more forward-thinking, and you have to be able to make those adjustments before they do. And I just don't know that he can. So they might win a playoff game or two, but when you have a team that's probably better than yours and the Eagles, you have to be able to be proactive and make some of those things that you're going to need to have happen before the game. And I don't know that he's that. I hope he can be because I like Matt LaFleur, but I don't know that he's going to outcoach Philadelphia to win a game where he has less talent.
Let me go through a couple more teams, potential nominees. Seattle, 10-7 last year.
No, quarterback, right?
Right.
Sam Darnold. We saw the big thing with Darnold is you saw some of that talent that was so tantalizing coming out of USC. You saw some of it, but then he just shrunk in the biggest moments. And so I need to see something more there. I need to see something. And they were okay with Geno. I mean, like you said, won 10 games last year, didn't make the playoffs. I think that defense is going to be a little bit better as they get more used to the Mike McDonald system. But no, I don't think they're a real threat to Philly.
So Grant and I are both lower on this team. Vegas loves them. The 49ers.
So
when they're healthy, that's an NFC title game contender.
Yeah, I don't know that Brock Purdy is going to be able to elevate the talent that's around him enough. I do kind of like where, and this is going to, again, go with the people that think I'm just so anti-Debo, but I kind of like where their offense is gone now, where they have true wide receivers more so.
Ayuk, Pearsall, Jennings.
And I think Pearsall is going to fit in there as a nice route runner, which is something I felt they've lacked, right? You've got Ayuk, who's good after the catch, more of a traditional receiver than Debo as well, but still good after the catch. I think Pearsall, now that he's going to have a full season, remember he had the Brian Robinson-like situation where thankfully he was okay and able to get back out on the football field, but having now a full year to get better and play, I think he'll be good, nice for that offense. But do I think that Brock Purdy's going to elevate them enough to beat a team that probably, again, I think Philly's probably the most talented team, even though they lost a bunch, they're probably still the most talented team or second most talented team in the league. So you're going to have to be able to outplay them. I don't see Brock Purdy being able to do that with San Fran.
So we'll go through the AFC candidates here in a moment and then figure out where Washington ranks in this hierarchy. Because I think I'm with you. I think it's that group of four that are the biggest threats to the Eagles. Detroit, Minnesota, the Rams, and then Washington. Somewhere shuffle up and deal there. We'll go through the AFC teams as well. Who could dethrone the Eagles? Who's their biggest threat? 800-636-1067 is the number. Toby and I will we'll tackle that next.
The Rams, number three, with Stafford, right? He's always a tough quarterback in the playoffs, right? You always got to deal with what they're going to bring, him and Sean McVay. Hopefully, they can get a running game that can be consistent. Now I got the Commanders, right? When you got to see Jaden Daniels, I like Marshawn Lattimore being picked up over there. Hopefully, they get some more weapons. But they're tough to beat. We've seen how they got hot at the end of the year. Nobody wants to see Jaden Daniels in the playoffs. And then the Lions. This team was a dominant regular season team. Even though they got upset at home last year, they're going to bring all their guys back. They missed 10 starters on defense and was still one of the top defensive teams in the league. So you bring back Aiden Hutchinson, and you see what those guys can do without them last year, they're going to be tough to beat. So I got the Lions being that team to challenge the Eagles.
Chris Harris Jr. from Good Morning Football. Tobes, refresh my memory. Who beat Detroit in the postseason at their place?
They were burgundy and gold, I think.
Yeah.
Washington.
Ah, that's right.
What is their team name again, Danny?
It's not important. The point is. Yeah. Wait, what's that? Is that me? What's that from?
I don't remember that.
I think it was.
What's the context?
I think we were mocking when we first had the big voice guy redo the rejoiners to say the Commanders. I think that was you mocking the big voice guy, but in a obviously jovial way because you hate the name.
Oh. Huh. Because I used to. So we used to do the bit. The Commanders. Because that guy did it that way. Where he's like, the Commanders.
Yep.
That sort of thing. And I did that. And then I got so mad about saying the name that I stopped even saying it.
Mm-hmm.
But like when we do like a Charlie Slows bit, right? So when, okay. This is so inside baseball. When Jason Worth hit that home run in game four against the Cardinals, okay? Charlie and Dave are going back and forth. Jason Worth's epic at bat, right? And they reference a time where Dave, during the regular season, in this epic long game, basically summoned a home run from Jason Worth, which he then hit to like send a game at extras that they ended up winning, right? And so Charlie goes, let's hope you're the summoner, Dave, right? And then he homers. And so you start doing it that way. And then when you do it, let's hope you're the summoner. And then I do it. And then Ryan does it. And by the time it gets back around, you're not just saying, let's hope you're the summoner. You're going, let's hope you're the summoner. And then like you do it again. And then the next time you go, let's hope you're the summoner. And it's not even doing the quote anymore. But it's the bit. I think that's that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough to listen to.
That's an all-timer, by the way.
God.
That's hilarious.
They do.
Shut up, Danny. Why do you? We're having a nice time, man.
Danny Routier?
Okay, Chuck.
But regardless, the Washington Commanders beat the Detroit Lions.
Thank you very much. You know who needs to have a good game? Ernie, is Tyrese Haliburton. Back to you. All right. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So, any hoodles, that's your hierarchy in some order for various folks. Real quick, you and me, let's run through AFC teams. Who you think are the biggest threats right now this minute to win the Super Bowl, beating the Eagles? Who do you got?
Chiefs. Has to be, right?
Yep, of course. Because they'll be there.
Buffalo Bills.
Yes.
Baltimore Ravens.
Yes. Still, I think. And this is why I wanted to run through it, because I don't know who the fourth team is.
Yeah, it's tough. Chargers, maybe? Bengals?
So Chargers was going to be my sneaky answer. They were an unsexy 11-6 last year. Right? People don't think of them that way. It's Harbaugh, dude. This is the second year of Harbaugh, implementing Harbaugh
exactly.
things.
Yes.
We're still in the Harbaugh honeymoon. It's going to turn south. Turn south? It's going to go bad at some point, where everyone's going to get sick of it, how he is the sun, the moon, the stars, the whole universe, and eventually rubs people the wrong way. But we're still in the, you do what I say, you win a bunch of football games phase. They were 11-6 last year in a division where three teams were over 500. Three teams made the postseason. They're good. That's kind of like my sneaky take. Herbert's already a star to me. I've always loved him. The production hasn't always matched. Playoff success hasn't been there yet. So people don't think of him that way. I think you've got a lot of really good ingredients. They're my fourth team.
Yeah, for me, a lot of times it comes down to which quarterback do I trust to be able to elevate the people around him the most in the playoffs. So I think I would still lean, because I'm a big fan of his and we've seen this guy go to a Super Bowl before, I would probably still lean the Bengals. But I don't know if I believe in their defense. And especially if they don't figure out this Hendrickson thing. If he's dug in that he's not going to play, if he doesn't play, if that's truly the case, and they don't trade him, then they don't have a real pass rush. And they don't have much on that side of the ball. Joe Burrow is going to go have to play Superman again. I'm glad they moved on from Anarumo, even though I thought he was a good defensive coordinator. It seemed like his message or his game plan had run stale
for whatever reason. Happening, it wasn't working.
So hopefully maybe a change there will improve. So I still got to go with them, because if I'm going off of what I'm saying with the quarterback, I've seen him do it before. But it wouldn't surprise me, because the Chargers probably have the better overall team, maybe just not the quarterback that's on the Burrow caliber.
We'll let this spill over here a little bit. 800-636-1067. So the question I want to ask is, where does Washington rank? We've kind of gone through our teams, right? NFC, we both kind of have a consensus. It's Detroit, maybe Minnesota. Rams are included, and Washington should be there. Where are they in terms of that hierarchy? And then compare that and contrast that with the AFC. Buffalo, Baltimore. I'm not ready to put Houston there. Maybe I should give them more credit, but I'm not. Kansas City, and for me, the Chargers are the fourth team. Where is Washington in that fighting for position behind Philadelphia tier for that list? They're the incumbent. They run the best. They're awesome. Who's the biggest threat to them? And kind of where does Washington rank? 800-636-1067. We'll do that next on The Fan.